I just received this email from Derek. He writes, he lives in Tucson, Arizona, listening over KNST-AM. He writes, during the last caller, we're talking about my interview with Christopher Garitano about Montauk, Camp Hero. He writes, during the last caller from Montauk, there were three bursts of radio interference. The first occurred when he was describing an object flying over him. He did. He described what appeared to be a UFO, 400 feet long, flying overhead in the fog. Then he and his sister went running home. Then there were two more bursts of radio interference, each longer than before. The last seemed to happen during the caller's last sentence. This may be nothing, he writes, but did anyone else have this same interference? Well, you can send me a tweet, if you'd like, at Richard Syrett, S-Y-R-E-T-T, and let me know. And then we'll find out. I didn't hear anything. All right. Did Lee Harvey Oswald fire the fatal shots that killed President John F. Kennedy, or was Oswald a patsy? And further, did Oswald have a doppelganger that was actually framed for the murder? Wait till you hear what my guest coming up has to say about that. George Schwimmer, the author of Doppelganger, The Legend of Lee Harvey Oswald, is next on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast AM. Richard Syrett coming to you from Coast Toronto, Canada affiliate. News Talk 1010, in-depth radio. Say hello on Twitter at Richard Syrett. The website, strangeplanet.ca. George Schwimmer, PhD, writes books, screenplays, and stage plays, including Casey, about the mystic psychic Edgar Casey, which has received rave reviews and high Amazon ratings. His most recent work is Doppelganger, The Legend of Lee Harvey Oswald. George Schwimmer, welcome to Coast AM. How are you?
Good. Hi, Richard.
Now, let me just ask you right out of the gate. This is a theory that Oswald had a doppelganger. There were more than, you know, some say there were two, some say there may have been three, four, five, six different Lee Harvey Oswalds running around. Where did you begin this journey? How did you start to investigate this?
It came about by chance. I was writing a screenplay, and I mentioned Lee Harvey Oswald, and then I thought, well, I haven't read anything about him for about 30 years, and I really should read something to see, you know, what people knew about him at the present time. And I read this book. I'm not sure which was the first book. It may have been Crossfire. Anyway, I finished reading the book, and it was an awful lot of confusing material. And I thought, this makes absolutely no sense. And so I bought another book, and I got the same experience. And I kept buying books, and I kept having the same experience that, there's something absolutely fishy going on here. And that's how I got started. And I didn't really have any theory. And in fact, I wasn't planning to do any research. I wasn't planning to write a book. And it's just that, the story grabbed hold of me because it was so crazy.
Now, the book Doppelganger, The Legend of Lee Harvey Oswald, is really, it's kind of a work of fiction because it's told through the eyes of the doppelganger, Harvey. But how much of this work of fiction is based on, you believe, hard evidence?
I think about 99%. In a few spots, I had to make deductions, and in a couple of places, I had to speculate just a little bit. But there was evidence around those deductions and speculation. So although I couldn't absolutely prove what I was writing, it was a good chance. For example, I write that Harvey was probably born in Hungary. There's no way of proving that at the present time, although I'm sure that the CIA and the INS and the State Department, they all know who he is, and maybe someday we're going to find out, but I couldn't prove it.
All right, so you mentioned Harvey. Let's kind of separate the two entities here. We have Lee Harvey Oswald, who we think of as the gunman who was in the sixth floor of the Texas Book Depository building and fired the fatal shots from his Mannlicher Carcano rifle. That's Lee Harvey Oswald, who preferred to be known as Lee. Then there is the gentleman you just introduced us to, Harvey. So, where's Harvey from? And then, who's Lee?
Okay, I want to mention one thing before I answer that question, and that really there was Lee, and there was Harvey, and then the last three or four months of Harvey's life, there was a whole slew of people who were impersonating Harvey. So you've got three layers there, not just two layers. You've got three layers. But to begin with, there was a real person who was born to the name of Lee Harvey Oswald. He was born October 18th, 1939, in New Orleans. And as far as we know, he had normal upbringing as he was growing up, although there was a lot of problems with finances with his mother. Mother got a divorce and then married another man, and the second man, which was Robert Oswald, died a couple months before Lee was born. So the mother, Margaret, had a lot of financial problems, and she had them for years afterwards. And one of the odd things is that she was associated with a mafia chieftain, Carlos Marcello, in New Orleans. And Marcello controlled New Orleans and all of Louisiana, as well as Dallas. And she is reported to have dated two or three of Marcello's men, and she used to go to parties that Marcello gave for his crime family. And sometimes she took her son Lee with her. Now, the reason that I just keep talking about Lee is that she had so little money, she had to go and put two other sons. She had older sons. One was John Pick from her first marriage, and the second was Robert Oswald. And she had to put them in a kind of an orphanage because she couldn't afford to take care of them, or wasn't able to take care of them because she was working. So most of Oswald's young life there was with his mother, and his brothers weren't around a lot of the time.
Right. And in fact, Oswald also, Lee Harvey Oswald, was kind of shipped off to his aunt and uncle and cousin's house. And he also, the uncle, I believe, had connections to the Marcello underworld, but also the cousin, the daughter of this couple, had CIA connections.
Yeah, this was a very strange family. Dutz Moret, Charles Moret, was the brother-in-law of Margaret Oswald, and his wife Lillian was Margaret's sister. And then Marilyn, one of their children, it has been determined, was working for the CIA, although she always refused to admit it. But when the House Investigating Committee held their hearings, they had to get permission from the CIA for her to testify before them. And then her whole testimony has been kept secret ever since. And I think there's a couple of hundred pages. Anyway, it's been kept secret. So if she wasn't CIA, it's very peculiar. But it's a very odd family. And almost everybody who is involved in New Orleans, people like David Ferry and Guy Bannister and Clay Shaw and so on, they were connected either with the CIA or with the mob, or with the FBI, or with all three of them. Guy Bannister, apparently, who was, I believe, one of the people controlling Harvey Oswald when he was there in New Orleans, He had connections with the CIA and the ONI, Office of Naval Intelligence, and apparently he was the head of the FBI office in Chicago, and he was very close to J. Edgar Hoover. So all of these people, they all ran in the same old circle.
Right. You point out something that's kind of ironic, and that is, as a young boy, Lee Harvey Oswald likely attended a party hosted by Marcello, and in attendance was another Marcello minion, and that was Jack Ruby. And so it's quite likely that an older Jack Ruby, you know, may have encountered a very young Lee Harvey Oswald, maybe patted him on the head, and then, of course, later would have been charged with the sort of the cleanup duty of killing Oswald.
Yeah, I just went back to look that up, and actually, Judith Vary Baker claims that he actually did, that Ruby actually did meet the young Lee Oswald in 1947. This was, Ruby had been a Chicago hood, and for whatever reasons, he decided to come to Dallas, and since Marcello controlled the crime in Dallas, Ruby had to go to Marcello to get permission to open a couple of nightclubs. And so he went to New Orleans, and apparently he traveled back and forth quite a few times, not only for his nightclub business, but also later on he was running guns, first for Castro, and then later on he was running guns for anti-Castro people. So he was traveling apparently quite a few times back and forth, so he must have been well acquainted with both Marcello and based on the things that happened later on, he must have known the Oswalds also.
All right, so again, getting back to young Lee Harvey Oswald, and we're about to discuss his rather strange trip up to New York City. But first, describe his character, some of his behavioral attributes that have come down to us from school officials and relatives. What was he like as a young boy?
Lee and Harvey were very different. Lee, based on what people said, there was a couple, I can't think of the name right now, but they were friends with Margaret for about 30 years. And when Kennedy died and Oswald was killed, these people were brought before the Warren Commission. And the husband said that he really disliked Lee. He said Lee was obnoxious. He was a psycho. He was a troublemaker. And that he was very loud. He was always shouting and yelling at his mother and asking for lunch or dinner in a very demeaning sort of way toward his mother. So he was unpleasant. This was when he was about 12 or 13 that they were reporting on this. And he was an unpleasant kid then. And when he later grew up, he didn't change very much because in Crossfire, it's reported that, although they haven't named it, you know, who made this report, but the report was made in Crossfire that people who knew, quote, Lee Harvey Oswald, which was Lee, said he was loud, he was a drinker, he swore a lot, he was dirty and uncouth, and that is exactly the opposite of what Harvey Oswald was, because everybody described Harvey as being polite, quiet, a teetotaler, and very neat and clean. So there's one differentiation right there between the two of them. You can see the difference. Also, when he was in grammar school, there are records that he was a troublemaker. Some of his classmates said he was always fighting. On one occasion, and this is significant, he had a front tooth knocked out. And so there's one difference that, you know, a few people really focus on, but Lee had a front tooth knocked out. There are two photographs that I have in my book. One was when he was in grammar school, and one was when he was a Marine in Japan. And it shows the front tooth knocked out, whereas the pictures of Harvey don't show any tooth knocked out.
And describe Lee Harvey Oswald's build, his physicality as a young man.
Well, let me go back and just starting with New York City. The FBI did a very good job of trying to destroy or hide all the school records of both Lee and Harvey, but a couple survived. And then one record where it's obviously Lee, he is described as being 114 pounds and 5'4", whereas Harvey, when he was examined by a psychiatrist for truancy, and then later when he came to New Orleans a year later by his homeroom teacher, both of them said he was 4'6", and the psychiatrist and social workers described Harvey as being scrawny, skinny. One psychiatrist said he looked like a kid out of a concentration camp. He was so malnourished. So there's, even at that young age, they were at that time about 12 or 13, there was a distinct difference with Lee being 114 and Harvey probably was about 70 to 75 pounds. So that's quite a bit of difference between the two of them physically.
So we had Harvey up in New York City. We had young Lee, who was from New Orleans. And at some point, these sinister forces decided that they were going to merge their two storylines, their lives. And so they brought Lee up to New York City. What were the circumstances? We just have about 2 minutes here, George. Okay. What were the circumstances? Why did his mother bring Lee up to New York City?
Okay, first of all, at that time, they were living in Fort Worth. Both Lee and Harvey, in order to do this doppelganger thing, both of them lived in New York, both of them lived in New Orleans at the same time, and both of them lived in Fort Worth. So at this time, Lee and his mother were living in Fort Worth. Now, I want to put a little bit of framework on this before we get into why he went up to New York. So you understand that originally there was nothing sinister about what was being done here. The CIA had this idea, probably hatched by Alan Dulles, because he had an interest in the idea of using twins for intelligence work. And so for the first 11 or 12 years of Harvey's life, he was just a normal kid. As I say, I'd probably born in Hungary, came to New York City, lived in New York City. Then somehow he was recruited. And then for the next 5 years or so, he was moved around and positioned so that he would appear to be Lee Oswald. So that was the second period of his life. Then the third period of his life was when he had joined the Marines. That was toward the end of 1956, and he completed that toward the end of 1959. That was all legitimate, okay? He got intelligence training, probably from the CIA, maybe from the Office of Naval Intelligence, but I believe it was the CIA. Then when he got out of the Marines, he went to Russia, as everybody knows.
George, I'm going to stop you right there. Excuse the interruption. We'll pick it up on the other side. George Schwimmer, author of Doppelganger, The Legend of Lee Harvey Oswald. Get on up to the Highlights Carousel at coasttocoastam.com, coasttocoastam.com. Our webmaster tonight, Lex Lonehood, has posted a couple of images in keeping with our discussion tonight with George Schwimmer, who is arguing there were two, at least two, Lee Harvey Oswalds, of a Lee and a Harvey. And one of the image, or the image shows two men identified as Oswald, the photo on the left taken in 1959, the other in 1963. And one has to wonder, could he have changed so much in appearance within just 4 years? And there are a couple of links underneath that picture, if you want to delve further, scratch at that a little bit on the theory there were multiple Oswalds. There's a Harvey and a Lee site, and another one called Seeing Oswald Double. All right. You know what's coming up very quickly? It's December. In another month, it'll be January, and then we will be into Alien Snowfest 3. Hard to believe. This will be the third Alien Snowfest up in beautiful Big Bear Lake, California, Jan 24th to the 26th. And George Norrie will be dropping by. He'll be there on the Saturday, Jan 25th, including, get this, a special Alien Hotcakes breakfast, co-hosted with our very own Tom Danheiser. Again, that's Alien Snowfest 3 happening at Big Bear Lake, California, Jan 24th to the 26th. George will be there on a Saturday. And don't miss that Alien Hotcakes breakfast with Tom Danheiser. For more information, to register and so forth, just go to coasttocoastam.com. Back with more of my conversation with George Schwimmer as we discuss Lee Harvey Oswald's doppelganger right here on Coast to Coast AM. We are back with George Schwimmer, the author of Doppelganger, The Legend of Lee Harvey Oswald. So we described Lee. Incidentally, we will open up the phone lines at the top of the hour. Questions and comments. So we didn't quite get to why Lee arrived in New York and when and how they started to merge the timelines between
right.
Lee and Harvey.
Okay, let me finish what I started. When he finished his stint in Russia for 32 months, he came back in 1962, June of 1962. So up to that point, this was a legitimate intelligence operation, okay? It had nothing to do with JFK, and it had nothing to do with the assassination. So he was co-opted later, which we'll get into a little bit later. All right, going back to your question as to why did Lee come up to New York, it was to start entwining their two different lives to make it seem like there's one person, so that Harvey, who spoke fluent Russian, could be put into the Soviet Union by the ONI and the CIA. And so they started merging the two lives. So after the two of them were in New York for about a year and a half, they both moved to New Orleans. And then later on, Harvey moved to Fort Worth, where Lee had lived before. So their two lives are completely scrambled up. And the FBI and the CIA and the Warren Commission did their very best to try to make sense out of all that and make it out as one life. But there were enough inconsistencies so you can tell that there's something funny going on.
Right. You mentioned Harvey being fluent in Russian. And if he was from the Eastern Bloc, if he was from Hungary, as you describe, and you seem to have managed to sort of pinpoint a neighborhood where he may have come from in New York, known as Little Hungary. It's quite possible that his second language may have been Russian, because that's always been kind of a conundrum. That and Russian is a very, very difficult language to learn,
yes.
And it is said that Lee spoke Russian without a hint of an accent.
No, and Harvey also, did.
Right. But the official narrative is that Lee Harvey Oswald.
Yeah, right.
Right. And also.
They claim he taught himself in the Marines, reading books and maybe listening to some records, which is ridiculous.
Right.
Because nobody can learn to speak fluent Russian like that.
The other curious thing, as you point out, in Doppelganger is when he returned from the Soviet Union and he hooked up with this white Russian in Dallas, George Demornschild. And apparently they love to read the Russian classics together. So it's just so unlikely that if Lee didn't learn to speak Russian until the Marines, that he would have such a mastery over the language. And yet Harvey, as you point out, did.
He had virtually no accent of any kind. I listened to a record of when Harvey spoke in New Orleans on radio broadcast, and he has no accent of any kind. Some people said he had a New York accent. I lived in New York, and Harvey did not have a New York accent. And not only did he not have a New York accent, he had not a trace of a Southern accent. And one of the interesting things I ran across was his brother, Robert, told, I guess it was the Warren Commission, that he had a pretty thick Southern accent, and that he had trouble communicating with people when he moved from New Orleans to Fort Worth. And so if Robert had a thick Southern accent, then Lee must have had a Southern accent also. But Harvey had zero Southern accent.
Which one of the Oswalds, was it Harvey or was it Lee, that was sent to the Isugi Air Force Base in Japan?
Lee was sent to Japan. He was in Japan, and it's interesting that people have tried to really scramble up testimony from other Marines who he worked with. But people, investigators, have checked these out pretty thoroughly now. And most of the boys who were with Lee in Japan said Lee had no interest in Russian. He did not subscribe to Russian magazines and newspapers. He did not listen to Russian records. The first time that, quote, Lee Harvey Oswald, unquote, was known to have been interested in learning how to speak Russian was 2 years into their service when Harvey wound up on Southern California. And there his bunkmates and so on said that, well, he'd call people comrades, and he was subscribing to magazines and newspapers, and was supposedly learning Russian. So but the Warren Commission claimed he started in Japan. It's not true.
Hmm. And it's at this point that they try and create this image of Lee Harvey Oswald as this this miscreant, this troublemaker who is about to defect. Talk to me about that.
Yeah, so it's interesting that somebody found out from some CIA operative that Marilyn Moret, Lee's cousin, as we mentioned, was with the CIA, and they were told that she had facilitated Harvey going to Russia. So that's another weird sort of thing. And one other was that his oldest brother, John Pick, talked to, I think he was in Japan also, and he talked to Marilyn, and Marilyn said, John hadn't seen his brother, I think, for about 8 or 10 years. And she told him that Lee had grown up, and he had a neck like a bull. A very thick neck, and if you look at pictures, you can see Lee did have a very thick neck. And John said when he was before the Warren Commission that he did not see this thick neck when he finally met his brother when he came back from Russia. Well, he didn't meet Lee, obviously. He met Harvey. Now, what was going on, and maybe Marilyn was involved with this, what was going on with Lee in Japan was he was setting up what is called a legend in intelligence work. In other words, it's a story made up about a person, which is their cover. And so Lee started manufacturing this cover for Harvey by getting into trouble. And he had a fight with his sergeant and threw a drink in his face at a nightclub. He was sent to the brig twice. He contracted gonorrhea. He had a Japanese girlfriend. He got hold of a derringer and supposedly shot himself in the arm. And so he was a troublemaker. And there is evidence that he gave phony information to Russian intelligence people in Japan. So he was creating this image of a malcontent who who would be the type of person who would defect and go to Russia. And so he was setting this up for Harvey. Harvey never did that. Lee set that troublemaker image up for Harvey to use as a cover in his intelligence operation.
Right. And in Washington, the CIA and the Pentagon had this program to send fake defectors from the U.S. Army, the U.S. military, into the Soviet Union, claiming that they were defectors. So they were sending this network of spies. So that's what Lee Harvey Oswald was part of, except Lee didn't go over to the Soviet Union. They sent Harvey, correct?
Correct. This was an Office of Naval Intelligence program. They dreamed it up, but once people got to the Soviet Union, the CIA ran them. And apparently they not only sent these so-called defectors to the Soviet Union, they sent them to other Iron Curtain countries, like Poland, Czechoslovakia, and so on and so forth.
And it would make perfect sense to send Harvey because he was fluent in Russian.
Well, apparently that's why they picked him. I can't find any other reason, and I haven't read anywhere that anybody else says found any other reason for Harvey being recruited except the fact that he was fluent in Russian.
What is curious, though, it seems like the Soviet officials suspected immediately that this U.S. Marine was likely a U.S. spy, that he wasn't a genuine defector. They sent him to Minsk, where he meets Maria. And she is a relative. Her uncle, I think, is kind of like KGB, right?
Yeah, her uncle was MVD, which is the internal security apparatus.
So that's kind of bizarre that Marina's, uncle is secret police, and she's dating and would later marry a U.S. defector. What was happening there? It sounds like a setup.
Well, some people suspect that the KGB had trained Marina to be a spy. Of course, she's always denied that, but there's no evidence that she was. But what happened is that this wasn't the only marriage that happened like that. Some of the other defectors also got married to women to whatever country they went to. And when they came back, they would divorce their husbands, apparently, so that they would be in a position to do some intelligence work. But there's no evidence of that. But that's what's been theorized.
Now, the actual Lee Harvey Oswald, who was at the Osugi Air Force Base in Japan, at this point, he kind of disappears then, because now Harvey Oswald sort of assumes the full identity. What do we think happened to the real Lee Harvey Oswald?
Well, apparently, I'm not quite sure exactly when it happened or where, but apparently Harvey went to some place like it was either Taiwan or the Philippines, and then toward the end, I think it was late in the fall, September or October, Lee disappeared, and Harvey took his place and went to a base in a Marine base in Southern California. And I believe that what happened with Lee is that he spent 1959 learning how to speak fluent Spanish, because when he later wound up in Dallas. And he met the three Latino women who were operated sewing machines for a company making dresses. And these women said they had lunch with him, and he spoke fluent Spanish. Well, Lee did not speak Spanish when he entered the Marines. So I believe that he spent 1959 in Monterey learning how to speak Spanish.
The other interesting
everything else we know about Lee was he was working with anti-Castro Cubans. So it makes sense that he learned how to speak Spanish.
Right. And at the time of the supposed defection, although it was Harvey that was sent to the Soviet Union and not Lee, the real Mrs. Oswald, Lee's mother, she also sort of recedes into the background. In fact, disappears and is replaced by Harvey's mother.
Yeah. One of the interesting things, the research at this book was really fascinating. This has happened a lot with other kinds of research also, but I'd run across things that I wasn't even looking for. And one of the strange things I ran across was the testimony of Lillian Murat, where she said her sister, the real Margaret Oswald, came to her somewhere after Harvey had just gone to Russia. That was toward the end of 1959 or maybe the beginning of 1960. And she told her sister Lillian, well, I'm going to disappear and you're never going to see me again. And when her sister said, well, why are you going to do that? And Margaret just wouldn't say. And she disappeared. So I don't know what happened with her. They may have eliminated her as well as they eliminated, I'm sure, Lee later on. But she disappeared. The real Margaret disappeared somewhere after 1960. But the phony Margaret was around, we know at least from 1952 on, and it may have been earlier, but that's when, any records show up.
But the problem is the faux Mrs. Oswald, that was Harvey's mother or someone supposedly connected to Harvey, she bore little resemblance of the real Margaret Oswald.
Yeah, well, the real Margaret was probably about 5'6" or 7", and all her pictures show she was relatively thin, very trim. She was a fashion model, according to her friends. And the woman who claimed to be Margaret Oswald after Harvey was shot was somewhere between 5'5" and 5'1". Pictures of her at that time show that she was quite a bit overweight. And whereas Margaret, the real one, worked in clothing stores and similar stores like that, this phony woman was a practical nurse. Once she served as a barmaid, once she was working in the cashier in a shoe store. And these friends, which I mentioned of Margaret, who knew her for 30 years, when the husband testified for the Warren Commission, they said, well, Margaret is 57 years old. And he said, yeah, she's the same age as my wife, but the woman on TV doesn't look like her at all, and she looks like she's 70 years old.
George, I got to jump in here. We're going to take a quick timeout. We'll come back and open up the phone lines, questions and comments. For George Schwimmer, doppelganger, the legend of Lee Harvey Oswald.